Hi, Doctor.
Hi, Dad.
I can't tell you how excited I am about this
Wow.
podcast. Yep, I'm coming out of the gate strong. I'll tell you, why without kind of letting
Giving
the
too much away.
cat out of the bag on everything, but so I've been into this kind of I don't know health kick thing for at least 15 years, really kind of researching and understanding and whatever. And I learn stuff every day because I'm not a researcher, I'm not a doctor, whatever, just a lay person in this. But I really didn't think I had a whole lot to learn about, a macronutrient like protein. But just goes to show you, don't assume. So, and really, not only kind of learn about stuff, but learn really actionable things that affect some pretty important stuff as it pertains to health span. I think we probably should begin at the beginning and explain, there are three what are called macronutrients: carbohydrates, fats, and protein. What's kind of interesting, and I never thought of it like this until I heard it described, but we generally consume fats and carbs for energy, and protein's different. Well, it can be converted to fuel if needed. It's really, kind of critical purpose is that it's required for everything from building muscles or sustaining muscles to sustaining all sorts of the metabolic processes that keep us alive. So it's really a unique it's a unique macronutrient, and we'll dig in kind of deeply, but kind of staying with that high level perspective, give us a give, just so folks have a clear understanding of kind of the what counts as primarily carbohydrate, primarily protein, primarily fat, with the understanding that most foods will have some of everything. Like a steak is going to have protein plus fat, maybe even a few carbs,
Yeah,
possibly.
there's multiple components. I don't think steak has any carbs in it. But yes, so most foods have different components of each. And you think that everyone kind of understands all of this. But sometimes people kind of don't have a clear understanding, or you realize someone is just maybe has confused the two, or so think a refresher is good. Most people know what carbs are. when you think about carbs, a lot of people think about pasta and donuts and bread and that kind of thing. And it kind of has a negative connotation to it. There's big, low carb, no carb world out there. But carbohydrates are found in all kinds of different things. There's carbohydrates in vegetables. So they're most common in things like whole grains, rice, pasta, flour, barley. They are present in starches and potatoes, sweet potatoes, corn. And there's carbohydrates in dairy products, fruits, honey will have fructose, which are carbs. Sugars are carbohydrates. Beans have carbohydrates in them. And vegetables have carbohydrates in them. So like there were some extreme low carb diets and even like keto diets where like someone would say that carrots have too many carbs, so they're too starchy. And it's like if you are on a diet where you can't eat carrots, then you have to like realize something is
Question
seriously wrong.
the diet.
Seriously wrong. So there's plenty of healthy carbohydrates. You do not need to eliminate carbs in order to be healthy. You just have to eliminate or minimize certain carbs, the
And
obvious
processed
things.
carbs in
Yeah,
particular.
and sugar. Sugar in small moderation is fine, but in general, processed carbs and sugar, limit, but there's tons of good carbs out there. And then fats are, can also sometimes get a global bad rap. When you think about fats, you're oftentimes thinking about maybe like saturated fats, the trans fats that were a thing that kind of have been banned since, stuff that's in fried foods, donuts, fast foods are usually all going to be those like saturated bad fats. But there are a ton of good fats that our bodies need and benefit from. So those are going to be your unsaturated fats. So saturated fats, if you look on a label, you want to minimize saturated fats. Unsaturated fats are going to be the poly and mono unsaturated fats. And those are healthy, good fats in things like avocados, oily fish, seeds, olive oil, and nuts. So a lot of fats are good. They're very calorie dense. So in that sense, you want to be mindful of portions of even healthy fats. But there's like carbohydrates, good and bad.
And they're also very satiating as well, whereas carbohydrates tend maybe not to be.
Or less, right. So proteins then are what you generally think of being an animal protein. So you eat a protein, so you're eating steak or burger or chicken, and those things are made up of largely protein. Depending on the type, if it's not a lean protein, it's going to have fat in it. But protein is also found in tons of other things. So fish is a good source of protein. Whole grains have protein. Beans are a great source of protein. Seeds and nuts have protein in them. Dairy, so like Greek yogurt, is a great source of protein. Milk is a growing child's, is a large source of protein for babies, obviously, mm-hmm. and growing kids. Mm-hmm. And then eggs, obviously, soy and tofu are other sources of protein. So vegetarians, for example, there are plenty of ways to get protein in your diet. And then, of course, you can get, you know, protein supplement foods, like even just the whey protein to make things, or you can get, you know, protein bars that have certain types of protein to help people get more of it. So those are usually like the three main macro nutrients.
Yep. Gotcha. And you know, it's interesting. So there's the government puts out this, you know, what they believe are the acceptable macro nutrient distribution ranges. So as on a percentage basis, how much of your calories should be coming from each one of those macros. Yeah. And they're fairly wide ranges. So it's like at the top, if you think about it in terms of a pyramid, it would be the bottom. The biggest piece is carbohydrates. And there's a lot of controversy around this. And we're going to get into why this isn't necessarily a valid perspective on, you know, right, how you should look at it, particularly as regards protein. But in general, what the government is saying is 45 to 65% of your calories should be coming from carbohydrates, 20 to 35% from fats, and 10 to 35% from protein.
Yeah.
And we'll talk about the, you know, some of the fallacy involved in those, you know, it's kind of like the, you know, it's the same thing with the USDA recommended daily allowances. We talked about this in the past, that, and particularly for protein, it's just woefully inadequate. But
right,
getting a little bit ahead of ourselves. So let's go back. You know, obviously, protein is critical for muscle development, both to add to muscle, but also as we get older to keep that muscle which we have. So talk a little bit about why, you know, muscle is important. Why should we should be concerned about it?
So there's multiple reasons, but the two big ones are going to be your mobility. So muscles support bones, and they support all of our movements. So you want to maintain as much mobility independence for as long as possible. Last thing you want to do is spend the last 10 years of your life needing someone to move you around. And there's so many different, you know, reasons why that can happen to someone as they get older. But one, not paying attention to your muscle mass and mobility can certainly impact that at all.
Yeah, I tell you, anybody who has, as we are, have And I think most people have like older relatives or friends, let's say beyond the age of 60, but even can happen prior to age 60. So there's this thing called sarcopenia, age-related sarcopenia, which means just muscle wasting related to older age. And you see people right almost before your very eyes become frail.
Because it's also something that has to be maintained. You can't like, okay, I've got this amount of muscle and it's going to stay with me because I built up this amount of muscle. I can tell you from like, you know, people who lift weights or go on stints of, you know, being on top of strength training and weightlifting, and then you stop or you decrease it, or, you know, you get sick or you, something happens, you can't do it. You lose muscle pretty quickly. So someone who goes into the hospital, for example, because they get sick and they're older, you know, you come out with far less muscle because you're just not, you're not activating your muscle. You're not using your muscles.
It is profound. It's profound how quickly you lose muscle if you're hospitalized and laying in a bed.
In a sense, because it's not just if you're hospitalized. It's like if you are on a regular weight training regimen and then you stop for something, it's going to help you in a very similar way. So, you know, mobility is the big thing. This prevents falls. I think there's a crazy statistic out there about over the age of 65, if you fall and break your hip, 50% of those people don't live to be 1 year later. 50% of those people have died a year later. And it's like, why are you dying from a hip fracture? You're not really dying from a hip fracture. It's the decreased mobility, the muscle wasting, the downhill effects of everything that happens after that. And then it just... It's also quality of life. So yeah, you don't want to have something happen that causes physical ramifications, but you also want to have a good quality of life with independence and mobility. And then the other big thing is metabolism. So muscle, I usually kind of phrase it as, takes a lot more energy. And by energy, you can also say calories, to have muscle just exist day to day compared to the rest of our tissue and our body. So it makes you more metabolically active because it takes up more energy to just exist and function. It's also a primary site for insulin activity. It's a big storage place for sugar, for glucose, blood sugar. So the muscle metabolism, you know, plays a big role when it comes to blood glucose and blood lipid metabolism. So if you have more muscle, you can think of it one way, like you can quote unquote eat more, but really it's more metabolically active overall.
Exactly. I've heard that, you know, one of the best things you can do to reduce your risk of diabetes is to build muscle.
Yep. It's like a little deposit site, for glucose.
Yep, exactly. I think it's helpful to think of protein kind of like you would think of a vitamin pill. So, you know, we don't have daily requirements for a vitamin pill itself. We've got the requirements for all of the separate vitamins within the pill. Mm-hmm. And proteins are somewhat similar to that, in that proteins are made up of a variety of amino acids, and we have requirements for these amino acids, and there are 9 of these amino acids that are referred to as essential because our bodies can't produce them. How many, help me with this, and sorry to put you on the spot with the biochemistry of it all, but how many amino acids are there?
Totally. I believe there's 29. I'm going to fact check myself.
I thought there was 22. So yeah, fact check us on
there's like essential and non-essential amino acids. So there's 20 to 22 amino acids.
And 9 of them are essential. So 9 of them. So let's go
the other way. 9 are essential. So I think that it's there's a couple that are not used in human protein synthesis, so those ones would not pertain to us. But there's a rough, you can just call it 20 amino acids, and 9 of those are essential.
And some of those amino acids, the non-essential ones, our body can create on its own. But
right,
that's
exactly why they're called that. Non-essential are dispensable amino acids and can be excluded from the diet because we make those using essential amino acids. Yep. So you need all of the 9 essential amino acids to make all of the rest. Yep. So it's not like you need to make sure you get enough of those 20 non-essential. You need to make sure you're getting the 9 essential to build everything else.
Right. Right. And it's interesting because each one of them has a metabolic role. Mm-hmm. Like leucine acts on mTOR. And I think we've talked about mTOR. It's it is a very important kind of pathway for metabolic processes related mm-hmm. to energy. Arginine and nitric oxide, lysine and carnitine. It's just all of those specific amino acids have a very kind of specific role. So it's important, you know, as we talk about protein, for people to understand that in addition to quantity, there's a quality aspect of protein.
Yep.
So you got to ask, what the foods you're eating, what, you know, not only do they have protein, but what's the quality of that protein? What's, you know, how many of those 9 essential amino acids do they comprise, and how much of them? And then it's not only that, but then it's the bioavailability,
right,
of that, because it's kind of similar to if you look at the carbohydrate amounts on a whole wheat, piece of whole wheat bread or whatever.
Right.
There may be, you know, I don't know, 15 grams of carbs in that. But yep. If 3 of those grams are non-digestible, then it don't matter. It doesn't matter in terms of calories, certainly.
Right. Right.
Even though those calories will be, I think, are counted in that, you know, in the total calories for that piece of bread or what yep. have you. So, yep. And that's where we get into an important difference between animal protein and vegetable. So the digestion and absorption is usually like around 95% or higher for animal proteins versus like 60 to 70% for plant proteins, exactly because of those non-digestible fibers.
Right.
In plants. So, and not only that, but again, going back to these essential amino acids, we know something like whey protein, which comes from animal, it comes from milk, whey comes from milk, is going to be 20% better than soy protein.
Just right.
Because of that essential amino acid kind of layout. So it's, you know, it can get complicated, but it's not that complicated. You just have to realize that if your focus is on getting adequate amounts of protein, we'll talk about what that adequate amount is in the next section we're getting into here, that you also need to give some thought to how much is coming from meat versus plant. And if more is coming from plant, then you actually need more overall protein.
Right. To get as much absorbed as you need.
You got absorbed and could get the, you know, some of those 9 essential amino acids you're not going to get. And you're going to layer on, you might need some help with your B12 vitamins, because that's pretty much, you know, the primary source is meat protein. But
right.
So talk to us a little bit about how much protein our body needs.
So this is where there's the, like, you know, conflicting information on how much protein should I get. But no matter who you are, what age you are, you need to make about 30 grams of new proteins a day. Your body needs
300.
300. So like your body, you either need to be like providing your body with it, or, you know, because your body is
making it itself, do
all kinds of different things. So the tissues are constantly turning over, your skin cells are, you know, every cell, you know,
hair's growing,
turnover. Yeah, that's like everything, and all of those cells require proteins that are being made inside of each cell. So like liver enzymes you replace every hour, so that's super fast. Other ones are a lot slower. Muscle protein, they kind of cut by half every 15 to 16 days. And then collagen has about every 30 days collagen turns over at about a half life of 100 days, so much slower. But still, you're constantly needing to replace stuff in your body. So 4 times a year, you can essentially think that every your body replaces every protein that it has. So you got to come up with 300 grams a day, but the average American's taking in 80 grams or less, and women is usually 70, and men is about 90. So it has to. So you got to make up for that somewhere, which means your body's recycling. And for every new protein that's being made in the body, 6 out of the 7 amino acids are getting recycled based on that intake. So then you're getting more protein synthesis and protein turnover, breaking down, you know, protein in places where, you know, ideally you were conserving it. And when you get older, the efficiency of protein turnover goes down. So you require a lot more turnover to create that same 300 grams a day as you did when you were younger. So,
which is kind of an explanation as to why, you know, it's so hard to gain muscle if you're over 60, let's say, and the tendency is to lose it, versus if you're 16 years old and you're getting adequate amounts of protein and you're doing some strength training.
Yeah.
It's a breeze.
Right. So if you are able to provide the 65-year-old with enough of the essential amino acids, then their body can respond similarly to the 16-year-old.
Now that piece was mind blowing to me, that because I had always thought that it was more like if you're 60 plus, the best you can do is kind of hang on to your muscle, but not even really hang on. You're going to lose it.
Gradually decrease.
Yeah. But so, and I'm trying to think where I heard this, but there's like 4 different things that trigger muscle growth. One of them is the level of hormone in your system. So obviously you've got more testosterone, both men and women, whether you're younger than older, and that's triggering a certain amount of growth. And not only testosterone, human growth hormone is triggering it. But that's only one of the 4 triggers. The one other trigger is how much protein you're getting in. So you can certainly, that's not age dependent as long as you're taking in more. Although as people age and they eat less, their protein intake kind of naturally goes down, you know, tends to. And then strength training. So the amount of stress is one of those 4. And I really forget what the other one was, but so certainly 2 of the 4, how much protein you get in and your strength training aren't necessarily age dependent, you know, completely.
Right.
So,
yeah.
So what is the amount that we should be targeting, let's say, for, so if we know 300, we need overall, obviously we don't have to eat 300 grams necessarily.
Correct. So like the recommended daily allowance, the RDA amount will say, you know, 0.8 grams per kilogram of body weight. But the amount that you really should be getting is kind of twice that, somewhere between 1.3 to 1.9 or say 2 grams of protein per kilogram.
Just a little bit less. I, you know, most people are more used to pounds than kilograms. This 2.2 pounds to a kilo.
Yeah.
So basically a little less than a gram per pound.
Right.
So if I weigh 170, I probably should be getting 130, maybe 140, as much as 140.
Right.
per day.
Every day. And I think part of the thing, you know, we all probably are underachieving when it comes to our protein intake, but you also don't realize the little bits of protein you do get through foods that you wouldn't consider protein foods. So, you know, there's protein found in all kinds of different things. I mean, like I said, your beans, your dairy products, things that you might not in your mind think of as being protein, you know, have some in it. But in general, you could probably almost double your protein intake and still be fine or better off than where you're at.
Right. Right. So, we'll go, you know, we'll take me for an example. So if my need is, let's say 130, question I would have, because I've done this intermittent fasting, is can I get it in one or two servings, you know, and mm-hmm. or does it need to be spread out or whatever? And it's interesting that, that there's like a limit per meal of how much your body can effectively utilize that protein before it just shunts it off to energy storage, so to speak. So there's a path where that protein can be converted ultimately into fat storage. Those, you know, the body doesn't, if the body's getting the calories from that protein, I think protein has 4.5 calories per gram or so. Mm-hmm. If I'm getting, you know, if I'm taking in 100 grams of protein in a meal and my body can only effectively utilize 50 of it for, you know, the muscle and other, you know, uses of the protein, then 50 of that or 225 calories is going, 50 grams or 225 calories is going to ultimately just get used as energy or energy storage.
Right.
Which is interesting. So, And it's some of the studies indicate that really the optimum kind of for response rates is somewhere between, you know, the range is on the low side 25 grams and on the high side 60 grams. So if I take kind of the median of that, maybe something around 45 grams or 50 grams is what I'm looking at. If I'm trying to get 130, I can, and I've also read that what you're trying to do is front load it, so get it early in the day and then later in the day,
right?
So say when you sleep. So it might be, my optimum might be 50 at breakfast, 30 at lunch, and 50 at breakfast gives me 130 grams.
Yeah.
So yeah. And so the important thing here is going back to that thing we talked about at the very beginning of, you know, the government's guidelines on what percentage of your calories should come from the macronutrients, carbs, fats, and protein. You shouldn't think of that protein being a percentage of your calories. You should think of it as being a set number.
Mm-hmm.
So because if I'm on some sort of diet where I'm taking in, let's say, 1,000 calories a day, I want to lose a little weight or whatever, then I still need to know that I need 130 grams of protein, and at 4.5 calories per gram, that's going to be at least 550 calories. So in that scenario, 55, maybe 60% of my total calories need to come from protein.
Which is, right, a lot more than you would probably ever think.
Right, right. And I think of, let's say, my mom in this scenario where she's, you know, she's 82. She's not eating a whole lot of calories. She might get 1,200 calories a day.
Yeah.
And, you know, she probably gets 10 to 30% of her calories of protein.
Yeah.
And that's just not enough. And I see it in her, you know, in her frame, so to speak. Mm-hmm. She's definitely smaller.
Yeah. So you kind of have to, and some people, right. So some people just eat a lot less, or their, I guess, appetite, I would say, is lower. So get it in the form of, you know, protein drinks, or use scoops of protein powder. That gives you a lot of, you know, bang for your buck in a yep. particular setting. But you do have to think about it.
I've come to the conclusion that there's no way I can get 130 grams of protein without some supplement like that.
Right.
Like a protein shake. Because I'm going to, two scoops of my protein is going to give me 50 grams. And that's boom, right there is a meal. That's actually what I had for breakfast today. So,
yeah.
So I kind of maybe stole your thunder a little bit there, but you know, if we're trying to think about, okay, how our meals are set up, because, you know, we're constantly breaking down and recycling this protein. What's the recommendation?
So you're going to want to start your day with protein, because you've been fasting and protein synthesis is down, and you want to start with protein, ideally 30 grams of protein. So you're not having to go into a significant span of time where you're breaking down in order to make the 300 grams. So get a lot of protein first thing in the morning, and then have, like you said, two meals that are above 30 grams of protein. 40 to 45 grams at the first meal is, I don't even know. I probably never get that ever.
And we're going to talk about a little bit of this at the end, but we can talk about it now. So if you're trying to get 30 grams of protein by, you know, a bunch of scrambled eggs.
Yeah, it's a lot of eggs.
You need 5 eggs. When was the last time you ate 5 eggs at a serving?
I mean, sometimes omelets are big, but not very often.
No, a 3-egg omelet is pretty good size, you know?
Yeah,
it's,
yeah.
It's, I've been making like using 4 eggs plus some chopped turkey.
Yeah.
To get it.
It's not easy. So that's where you think of adding maybe even like certain protein bars or protein shakes or meal replacement kind of things. If you're not someone who's able to like make yourself a big protein breakfast, or Greek yogurt has a lot of protein, so that's a good thing to add.
Absolutely. That was eye-opening too, is Greek yogurt. Not regular yogurt, Greek yogurt, because it's strained, is going to give you like 18 grams of protein per 6-ounce serving. And what was interesting, Nicole, is, you know, I don't know if you get the same yogurt I get, but the yogurt I get is available in like fat-free 0%, 2%, and 5%
mm-hmm.
fat. And the 0% has several grams more protein than the 2%, and the 2% has more protein than the 5%.
Mm-hmm.
So, because I guess by volume, so to speak, some of that is being taken up by
exactly.
the fat.
So that's what I do. I do 0%. And you know, there's a ton of different kinds, but you try to do the kind with little added sweetener, sugar. But you can get a good amount of protein that way.
Yeah, absolutely. I think a nice go-to is that combo of, you know, yogurt, some artificial sweetener like an allulose, some cinnamon, a little vanilla, and you kind of create your own. Because if the problem is, if you buy vanilla yogurt at the grocery store, you're getting probably a lot of high fructose corn syrup in it and whatever. Yeah. I'll tell you the other thing about getting that good load of protein early is you are not hungry for a good long time afterwards. And even I've got to remind myself at lunchtime to eat lunch, because I'm just, you know, and that's a lot of times I'll just have my, you know, a smaller protein shake, trying to get my 30 grams in it through a protein shake at lunch, because the last thing I want to do is eat another big, you know,
Another big portion. Yep.
So from a hunger, it's kind of maintenance.
It's much more satiating, for sure, without a doubt. And it also levels off, helps control your blood sugar. So if you're eating a meal, like, you know, say you're having pasta or something with carbs in it, making sure you've got a good protein load with it will help keep your glucose load or spike down.
Which is critical in a lot of ways, but one is to avoid then that drop in glucose, which creates hunger pangs, which drives you to the, you know, mm-hmm. ice cream at night or what yeah. have you. But, and they've done a number of studies that have indicated that, you know, they've taken these people on, you know, either high carb, low protein diet or low carb, high protein diet. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I know there's been some controversy around these and they're tough to do, you know, in a randomized controlled setting, but it's clear that the lower carb, higher protein cohorts are losing more weight. Mm-hmm. And in fact, the study I looked at found that the people on the higher protein diet were getting a benefit of around 170 calories a day, eating the same amount of calories. But they didn't feel as hungry, and they were burning 170 calories more per day, which speaks to, I think it's called the thermogenic effects of the digestion of protein. Like mm-hmm. it's gonna like carbohydrates, it's pretty easy for your body to digest.
Yeah, it takes way more effort and energy to break down protein.
Protein. So you're gonna, you know, if you take in 100 calories of protein, it may take 30 calories to fully digest that. Right. Whereas 100 calories of carbohydrate might take 5 calories or 10 calories tops. So let's finish up by just giving folks just a perspective on protein sources and how much protein there are in different foods. So how about meat, you know, poultry, eggs? We talked about eggs having about 6 grams. So, mm-hmm. you know, to get your 50, you got to do almost 8-9 of them, whatever. But yeah. But if I was going for a piece of chicken, let's say.
Yeah. So, I mean, ounce for ounce, chicken is the way to go, which is good because it also is going to be lower in saturated fats compared to red meat. But it is 28 grams of protein in 3 ounces, a 3 ounce serving size. And that's only 141 calories. So we're talking probably lean protein here. And
3 ounces is less than a quarter pound.
Yeah. So most people are eating more than that.
Pretty small amount.
So yeah. Chicken's a good way to get kind of good, healthy protein in. And we won't talk about, you know, different protein and the best animal protein for the environment, because that'd be a whole nother discussion.
Podcast, yeah.
But if you just compare chicken to steak, you know, there's essentially the same amount of protein. There's 26 grams in 3 ounces. You know, generally speaking, 158 calories, but steak varies widely in the amount of fat. So right. That's probably some pretty lean steak.
Yeah. If you're eating a ribeye, the calories go up.
Yeah.
Versus a filet or even strip.
Yeah. And then turkey, even at 3 ounces, has 25 grams. So all kind of in the same
bucket
boat there. Ham is not as advantageous yeah. when it comes to protein. There's 14 grams in 3 ounces. And pork is pretty good at 22 grams in 3 ounces. So, but all of those are, you know, the highest sources of protein per ounce, but fish is not that far behind. So 3 ounces of salmon is 22 grams of protein. Tuna, 22 grams of protein. 3 ounces of shrimp is 20. Shrimp is a great source of protein. And kind of pretty lean as far as calories mm-hmm. are concerned. Mm-hmm. So those are the things that you would need to really make sure you're getting your protein without having to put a ton of effort into thinking about it. That doesn't mean you have to eat animal protein and fish, you know, because, you know, some people just A, don't like it, or B, for other reasons, are, you know, vegetarians and But you then have to kind of think about it a bit more. You have to start counting, which I think is never a positive thing. I don't ever think that someone should follow a lifestyle where they're counting their macros or counting their calories or tracking, you know, that kind of thing. So it probably becomes second nature once you do it for a while. But all of the other sources of protein are going to have, you know, 10 or less for the most part, except for Greek yogurt, which we talked about.
Which we talked about. Yeah. It's, you know, so if you're trying to get it through vegetables, like we said, you know, even beans, black beans have 8 grams of protein per half a cup serving size. So even if you bumped it up to a full cup, you're still only getting 16 grams, which is, you know, much less than, you know, what we were talking about meat and fish wise. And, and, you know, quinoa is, you know, promoted
to be
as
like
being,
quote unquote, protein packed grain.
And it's like 4 grams per half a cup, 8 grams per cup, which a cup of protein, a cup of quinoa is not a small amount.
And it's essentially the same as spinach. So you are probably better off eating the spinach. Because that's 3 grams of protein in a half a cup.
And if you look at the calorie component of quinoa, you know, to equal chicken at 28. So 28 grams of protein, it's costing you 141 calories in chicken. To equal that in quinoa, you have to go 7 times that. So you'd have almost 800 calories of quinoa.
And no one's eating quinoa plain. No, I don't even care if you're eating that amount. You're not eating it plain.
Right.
And with chicken, you can season it, of course, but you're not adding a ton of calories to it. Right. With quinoa, you certainly are adding stuff to it. So it's just kind of interesting to see it, look at it in front of you, like just Google charts for sources of protein, because you don't even have to sit down with like a calculator and count your stuff up. You can kind of just see it based on that. And nuts are very similar to the beans and vegetables but go up pretty significantly on calories. So the soy nuts, which I don't know if I'd consider that a nut, that's more just soy, is one thing at 12 grams for 1 ounce, which 1 ounce is not too much. But then everything else, the highest percentage of protein comes in pumpkin seeds. So 9 grams of protein in 1 ounce of pumpkin seeds at 160 calories. And then peanuts and peanut butter are 7 grams. So like, you know, some people think like they use peanut butter as their source of protein. I say you're using peanut butter as a source of fat.
Yeah, right.
A little bit of added protein to it.
Right. You can, it's fine to snack a little bit on that sort of thing. But if you think that's your primary source, then
it's not happening. Work. Yeah. And you know, nuts are good for other reasons. I think of like the pistachios, almonds, walnuts, and pumpkin seeds being like better sources of good fat than I think of them being good sources of protein.
Protein. Good point. Good point. Well, Nicole, I think we've covered this subject exhaustively. I hope for the listener, it's been as fun as it has been for you and I on this. Like you said, I would encourage folks to go and look at Google a protein chart. And see what foods have how much protein. I think the big takeaway is get more protein, look at it as, you know, you need not quite, maybe a little less than a gram per pound. So do the math and then figure out what your protein needs are. Get it early in the day and later in the day, but particularly early in the day. It'll help you with your satiety, so you'll feel full through a good part of the day. It's a great way to kind of control weight as well, and obviously it's going to have great impacts on your ability to build and or maintain muscle, particularly if you combine it with some sort of strength training. That's kind of the formula. So Awesome. Well, I look forward to connecting again, and you have a great rest of your day.
You too. Okay. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thanks again for listening. You can visit thedrandad.com. That's spelled thedrandad.com for show notes to any of our podcasts.
as well as other useful info on extending health span. Now the legal disclaimer. This podcast is for informational purposes only and does not constitute the practice of medicine, nursing, or other professional healthcare services, including the giving of medical advice. And no doctor-patient relationship is formed. Use of this information and show notes is at the user's own risk. The content of this podcast is not meant to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Listeners should not disregard or delay taking medical advice or treatment for any medical condition they may have and should seek the assistance of their medical professional for any such conditions. We also want you to know that we take no funding from any product or service that may be mentioned on the Dr. and Dad podcast.